Good morning. My name's Julie Fedorchak. I am chair of the Public Service Commission. We're gathered at 10 o'clock on Thursday, April 21st. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. 21st. For an informal hearing on Dakota Natural Gas. I don't have any opening comments on this. Commissioner Christman, do you?
I do not either.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
No, I do not.
All right, excellent. I'm just going to keep things quick. We have Victor Shook and Brian Johnson in the hearing room with us from our staff. And then I see Christine on the screen. Hello, Christine. Oh, let's see.
You're on mute.
I see the mute off on your mic thing, but we still don't hear you, so let's figure this out. Try it again. No.
Try switching your audio device in the settings.
Let's try this. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Sorry, I thought I had it set right. I have a newer computer, and this is the first time I've done a GoToMeeting with you on this computer, so.
That's all right. We got it figured out. So is this this is an informal. Okay. So Christine, we've gone the rounds, and I think we can just kick it over to you to kind of give the overview. So we wanted to talk about your requested tariff revisions, and then we really want to talk to you more about your company's gas purchasing and securing contracting practices. And so
certainly
maybe we can go through the tariff stuff first, and then we can move into the second component. And do you have any prepared presentation or anything like that?
No, I'm happy to answer questions or give a quick overview if you need to. The changes are really pretty straightforward, and a couple are just administrative in nature. So.
Yeah, maybe you can just give a quick overview.
Okay, so just a couple of administrative changes that are highlighted in staff's memo as well. Our Board of Governors has named Cody Chilson as our president. That doesn't mean that Greg Palmer is retiring. They're just working in tandem for as long as they can. In a company of this size, it's important to have, you know, business continuity planning. And so that's what that's related to. And the second administrative change is really just to have one location in the tariff where the areas we serve appear and make it easier for anyone concerned to find that in the tariff. The substantive changes that we've proposed are two. The first is to change the usage ceiling for the small commercial class, and then likewise change the usage floor for the commercial class. Essentially, we have, based on usage for the last year as we look at it, we're seeing that our small commercial customers are using more gas than they and we originally predicted that they would when we were developing the tariff. And essentially what that means is that based on their year's usage, they would get kicked up into the commercial service rate class, and the facility fee or the monthly fee for that class is substantially higher than it is for the small commercial class. It's $16 a month for the small commercial class, $100 a month for the commercial class. The reason that we felt a tariff change was warranted is because of the meter is the same meter on the small commercial class, and that wouldn't be changing. So they'd be continuing to use the same existing meter, which for us means the same level of service requirements, the same level of equipment cost, and things like that. So it seems a little arbitrary to kick them up into the class that has the higher facility fee, simply because they've been able to avail themselves of the benefits of natural gas more than we ever anticipated that they would. So it's simply about equity.
Sure.
And it wouldn't affect any customers retroactively. It would be a go forward change, and it's better for the small commercial customers in the long run, and doesn't have an adverse impact on the company to do it that way. The other substantive change.
Can I quick ask a question?
Sure.
One quick question about that. The $100 fixed monthly fee for the is it general firm service or to the
that's the commercial. Yeah,
for the commercial?
Commercial general firm service.
Is that fee based on the cost of the meter? Is that what drives
fee? There is more involved with those. It does require a different meter, and it consequently then also requires a little bit different servicing from our technician standpoint.
Got
so the company has higher costs involved with that larger size meter.
Got it.
Since the meters that the smaller size meter that are currently on the small commercial firm customers can handle up to $49.99 in terms of usage, it just makes sense to change, adjust the ceiling and floors accordingly so that they're not paying more for a facility fee when their meter hasn't changed.
Okay, very good. That helps. Thank you.
And then the other change is about adjusting the length of our standard main extension. At the time that our initial tariff was approved, our standard main length was set at 250 feet. That was also based on our contract with our contractor that does our installations. That was part of the standard length then. In the last few years, just like every other industry everywhere, costs have risen significantly. Our contractor has adjusted how it treats our standard length. Materials are more expensive, labor is more expensive. And so we believe that it's appropriate at this time to change our standard length to 125 feet. I also will share with you that the companies on our Minnesota side of our family of companies, the distribution company there has done the same thing, and Minnesota has approved that. We did an analysis looking backward, looking at the customers that we're serving in North Dakota so far, as well as our anticipated project that'll be happening in Portland during this upcoming construction season. The majority of our customers historically and the vast majority of our prospective customers in Portland do fall within that 125 foot range. So we don't anticipate that there would be any adverse impact on residential customers or standard, you know, business customers in the cities. Where it does come into play is that those customers that are maybe in more rural areas or make a special request for a longer service line because they want it routed in some unusual way, they would have a little bit higher contribution and aid than they otherwise would have. But the breakdown of that is really pretty nominal. So we think it's appropriate, and staff has concurred that it's a reasonable and prudent change after it reviewed all of our materials.
Sounds good. In my view, that is a decision that's up to you guys, and it will impact the appeal that your company has to attracting new customers. So if you feel like it makes more sense and isn't going to be a deterrent, I don't have an issue with that one personally. Do either of you have questions or concerns?
I have one.
You got to turn your mic on.
Is the 125 based on any kind of, I mean, you mentioned your companies in Minnesota have made this change, but any larger scale kind of industry standard or something like that, or why not 150 or 100, or where did the number come from?
The number is largely based on how our installation contractor has adjusted our contracts with them over the years and what they consider standard installation. So it's to match that, which seems to make the most sense from the perspective of how ratepayers are treated as well. That if we're paying for it as part of our flat rate standard, you know, what our contractor treats us for flat rate standard installation cost, we want to be able to maximize that and have the customer at the same level. But it also wouldn't make sense for us to continue to have our standard installation rate be at a higher rate than what our contractor charges, because then that essentially results in the majority of the ratepayers subsidizing those customers who have longer service lines, because we would have to be paying more than that. We also have seen larger companies, some of the larger utilities, making moves toward reducing their standard service lines, standard service line length, and or increasing their how they charge for excess lines in new rate cases, for example. Again, on the Minnesota side, there are multiple rate cases going right now with some of the larger gas companies, and we're seeing that as proposals in their rate cases to do the same thing. So I think it is something that's affecting the industry as a whole. I also was in just an informal conversation with other members of a trade organization, a gas trade organization in other parts of the country. And that's one of the things that came up. And it sounds to us like that is something that we're starting to see ripple through the industry. And then, you know, in looking at how service lengths break down in municipal areas versus rural areas, that 125 feet really does pick up the scope. For example, by our estimate of our potential customers in the Portland area that we'll be doing this year, we think about 90% of them fall within that 125 foot range. And then what we do for excess footage, essentially it just becomes a pass-through cost. So we're not taking any markup on the excess footage. If a customer wants excess footage or needs excess footage, they're only paying what it actually costs to get it in the ground and not anything beyond that calculated cost.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions, Sherry?
Yeah, I do have a question. When looking at what you submitted, Christine, when I look at the rate book on the second third page, it says rate area number one, and you have it redlined out, City of Drayton, Drayton Township, and it says C section 5, sheet number one. And that's the sheet I'm on. So I'm like looking at the rate area, trying to identify that rate area. So I did go to your website. And by the way, thanks for bringing out Call Before Your Dig. You promoted that very heavily on your website. So is that rate area we're looking at Drayton, Hillsboro, and Mayville? And with
Yeah, it is. And our, I apologize if I had a typographical error in there. I will fix it in a compliance filing once the approval is made. But our goal is to have one page that updates the rates, and then have, so for the rate area, I have it direct to that, or excuse me, one page that updates the areas. And then for that sheet, have it point to the page that lists all the areas. So currently it's going to be the Drayton, Hillsboro, and Mayville areas, and then we'll add the Portland area, we add the city, and we add the environs. So we want to be able to just have one sheet where, as we expand, we only have to update that one sheet instead of having the names of the locations in two areas.
And that makes sense. I was just trying to find it in this.
I apologize. Nope. That would probably be my fat fingers as I was typing.
Well, your website made it clear for me when I went and looked, that assuming that those were the areas, and with Portland coming on in the fall of 2022.
Yes.
Okay. Other than that, you've answered my question regarding the what Ms. Commissioner Chrisman asked, in your clarification on the extension policy and why the change and all that. So thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you. All right. Victor or Brian, any questions on this part?
I do not. The like I had kind of spelled out my memo, I think the company did a good job of putting together this filing. The changes make sense outside of the one. Sherry had mentioned it. Actually, I didn't catch that myself. So that sheet reference was incorrect. What section should that be, Christine? Do you?
I'm just pulling it up here. Computers are wonderful until they're not, so it's running sure. just a little bit slow. But I'll have it for you in a second here.
Okay.
All right, Brian. Anything from you?
Nothing from me.
All right. Okay, then if we could kind of transition over to our discussion about your gas contracting policies or procedures. And This kind of came up, obviously, reared its big, pretty ugly head during URI, and you guys came out very well in that scenario because of how you purchase. But it does occur to me that it could have been very different for you, just if that timing had been a few weeks different. And so I thought it would be prudent to walk through, just talk about your gas contracting procedures, policies, how you guys have looked at what happened and are protecting yourselves moving forward from a timing that could have left you in really dire straits. So is it okay for me to just ask you to kind of walk through your company's approach as a starting point for this discussion?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to do that. Respectfully, I'll just go back and note the on the matter that we were just talking about, the service area page in the tariff is section 2, sheet 1. And so that would be what the other sheet would point to, would be the rate areas are listed in detail on section 2, sheet 1. So I'll make that change. I apologize for that. Perfect. So
thank you.
With regard to the gas planning, we make every effort to insulate our customers from rate variability to the extent that we can, which also helps protect our company from the same thing. And the way that we do that is to use long-term contracts. So to the extent that we can lock in our anticipated firm capacity plus a sufficient reserve margin for the entirety of the heating season, including the shoulder months. So we'll look at October or November through the end of April, generally locking that in. We use long-term contracts. We look for things ideally that are 5 years in length or longer so that we have demand entitlement that is sufficient for our heating season. It's, you know, there isn't always access in pipelines, so you can't necessarily always go out and grab additional demand entitlement. So one of the other principles that we apply is always watching for when there is something additional available, and then if we can get it in a way that we think is economically prudent and not going to put the company at risk, we haven't had to do that yet with DNG, but with the other companies in the family, you know, with the GMG side, for example, we will grab extra capacity when we have the opportunity to do so. We did recently have an opportunity to grab a little bit of extra capacity for DNG. And so we took it because we believed that that was something that was prudent, and it's long-term capacity with Viking. We also make sure that our contracts have sufficient opportunity for us to use SMS for balancing, which,
Can you say what is SMS?
So that is it's a certain way to purchase gas that allows us to get a little bit more to meet our needs. Still within, it doesn't change our entitlement level, but it allows us to get some gas without having to go all the way out to the day market, which is really where the problems happened, right? It happened with URI. DNG wasn't in existence back in the, it would have been January of 14 when there was a Trans-Canada pipeline explosion and one of the lines went down. And we saw a similar situation where day gas prices went crazy haywire. And so for companies who rely on a lot of day gas market, they had similar circumstances. It wasn't as dramatic as URI, but it was similar circumstances. And we historically, because we're small, we as a family of companies are small, and also because that's just the most prudent planning from our leadership's perspective, is to try to lock in firm gas supply through the entire heating season in long-term contracts so that we do have price stability and we always know it's there. We tend to be relatively conservative with our reserve margin calculation. You'll see a lot of larger companies, and I should preface this by saying I'm not sure what they're doing in North Dakota. they might be a little bit more conservative in North Dakota than they are in some other states just because of the weather situation in the winter. But certainly in other northern states, it's not uncommon to see reserve capacity in the 4, 5, 6% range. We tend to try and run our reserve capacity a little bit higher than that. Certainly not so high that our customers are paying for undue and unnecessary demand entitlement, right? We want to make sure that we don't secure so much capacity that the rate payers see an increase that they don't really need. So we don't want to pad it too much. We're never going to have a 20% reserve or things like that. But we try to run somewhere above 5%, somewhere in the 5 to 10% range is what we're thinking right now. Makes the most sense to ensure that we can stay out of the day gas market to the extent possible and not be impacted by price spikes from suppliers as well. That's sure. What has allowed us to consistently over the years be able to insulate our customers from price spikes.
So you have firm contract in place for your peak demand plus a 5 to 10% reserve margin?
We do.
And how, what do you do in a year where it's really warm then and you hardly use any? Like, how do you deal with that risk?
Well, because we're in long-term contracts for our demand entitlement, that's what gives us that price stability, right? So because we're not using day gas very much and we have this entitlement locked in for a long period of time, yes, there's some risk in that as well, right? If it's a warm year and you're not using as much gas in the heating season, sure, you're paying for some entitlement that you don't really need. But because we're very prudent about how we do that and we get the benefit of long-term contracts in terms of purchase price, there is less significance in that. And we figure it's better to risk a small amount of what essentially constitutes overcharge if you break it down, right? Than to risk the huge fluctuation in prices in really cold months or not having enough demand entitlement. Because that's what happens. If you don't have enough gas to supply your firm customers in the really cold seasons, then you're going out to buy day gas, and that's where it gets really expensive. We go through an analysis of where our reserve margin should be based on heating degree days and historic use. So we do statistical regressions. We also do straight up mathematical analysis where we'll go back and we'll look at our historic peak day. And then we do an analysis with heating degree days to figure out in a design day, if we had a winter where we hit a design day, would we have enough gas to serve everybody? And so that's where we talk about our reserve margin. Our reserve margin makes sure that we anticipate having enough gas to serve everybody in a design day. But it doesn't go way beyond that because design days don't happen very often. We actually did have one a couple of years ago, but they don't happen very often. It's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. So explain how you weathered Uri, how the gas, purchasing and supply, I guess, how that worked for you guys during Uri. So I thought there was some sort of a commitment, like a monthly thing that influenced your gas availability, et cetera.
So because of how we contract for our gas, we're guaranteed a certain amount of gas that we believe to be a sufficient amount of gas to cover our firm customers in design day conditions. So we're guaranteed a certain amount of gas at that price every month.
And right. Do you change that every month, Christine? Does that number change every month?
Not with our demand entitlement. So our demand entitlement is consistent. Now we sometimes will do, and as we grow, I expect our portfolio mix will grow a little bit. So I apologize, but I'm going to rely on sort of our experience in Minnesota because we manage the companies the same way, right? So as our Minnesota customer base grew in GMG, we continued to manage our portfolio in different ways, but still always with that idea of insulating customers from price spikes during the winter. Because in the climate conditions that the northern states are in, we know that's when our heavy gas usage is. So we will look to have secure contract all year long, but we base it on what we see as usage patterns. We don't have as much secure gas in the summer yet for DNG because we haven't been around long enough to really have a good assessment of what the North Dakota patterns are. As time goes on, we'll solidify our year-long contracts, and then we add, you know, contracts that are where the gas is available during the heating season. So it might be October to April, it might be November to April, but those contracts then are long-term contracts. So we may add a winter contract, a heating season contract, but it's a five-year deal or longer if it makes sense to do a longer deal and it's available. But a lot of times we see five-year contracts. So we know, and our supplier knows, we are going to have X capacity every year during the heating season for 5 years at this cost, at X cost, right? So we lock that in and we know we always have that capacity. And then we have the ability to use SMS to balance if we need to. And if we need to go into the day gas market, then we go into the day gas market, but that's, we're sort of always kind of watching. So when Uri happened, we were watching the weather, obviously. We were watching what was anticipated to be coming. We were watching our supply. Our gas supply person is watching that daily, including in the evening, including on the weekends. And we have more than one person that watches that so that we can make adjustments in balancing if we need to. We can go to the day gas market if we need to. If we need to ask interruptible customers to interrupt a little bit, we do that. But we manage all of that so that if we're going to have to buy day gas, we can do that at the time of the month, hopefully, where it's going to be least expensive. And that's how we were able to get through Uri between our contracted gas supply and then being able to use our balancing, our SMS balancing supply, which is that's what gives us the right to shift a little bit from our entitlement, get a little bit more gas, but still not have to go out to the day gas market. We were able to do that and balance that so that to the extent that we were going to need any day gas, it was going to be after the worst of the impact of the storm. And we're monitoring that every day through the entire year, not just during the winter months. We monitor gas supply all year long.
So a question then on your contract, this five-year contract, are you entitled to the maximum amount at any point every single month? Or do you have a monthly amount that you commit to as you get closer, you know, like before each month begins or something? Or how does that contract actually work in terms of your monthly commitments?
Commissioner, real quickly before we continue, we are outside the notice provisions of the meeting with this discussion. It was noticed for tariff changes and whether or not they're reasonable and should be approved. So
we didn't notice this? I mean, we talked about it. It wasn't included.
I was aware that you were going to discuss it. In terms of what it means for public notice, I can't comment on that. But we were certainly aware of it, that it was going to be discussed today.
That is the notice.
Yeah, this is the notice.
So what? Then what?
I think we could take a break and notice it. I'm not sure. Is there a requirement on this one for days in advance? We can notice an informal at any time, I believe.
Your mic isn't on, Victor.
Right, for informal hearings, we don't really issue an advance notice of anything.
So I guess
per se, other than the.
I think if it's if we're able to do so, it'd probably be good to pause the meeting at this point and notice an informal with that as the topic.
You guys have a preference?
I'm okay with that. Or I think she's answered a lot of the questions. I don't know if you have a lot more questions. I would have one or two, or I can just follow up through staff with them too. However you choose to do it, will be fine with me. Yeah.
And be cognizant of her time. I mean, what
do you have time to give us 10 minutes to notice this, Christine?
Absolutely.
All right, maybe we should just do that to be extra prudent. And then I think we could probably still finish it up within the hour, because I do want to understand better the answer to my last question. I'll try to remember it.
I remember it.
All right. And then we'll come back in. Maybe we can just say a quarter or two. All right. Well,
I have a question too for her.
Yes. Yeah. And there might be additional conversation. So we'll try to wrap it up within the hour then still, but we might go 15 minutes or so over 11 o'clock if we take a 15 minute break. So, all right. We'll reconvene at a quarter two to continue this discussion on your gas contracting policies. Thank you.
I appreciate
you
staying around, Christine.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah, thanks, Christine.
Thank you. Right.
We're ready. All right, thank you, Matt. We are convened in the Public Service Commission 12th floor hearing room for an informal hearing with Dakota Natural Gas on their gas purchasing contracting procedures. It is Thursday, April 21st. And Christine Anderson is on the line. I see you there, Christine. And in the hearing room with me are my colleagues, Commissioner Randy Christman and Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hoffert, and also our staff, Victor Shook and Brian Johnson. And so we're going to turn it over to Christine, and where she can continue. We did talk about this under previously noticed, but realized it would be more clear to the public if we noticed it under this specific topic, which is their natural gas purchasing contracting procedures. So we are going to pick up where we left off on that discussion and pass it back to Christine Anderson from Dakota Natural Gas to kind of continue where she left off. So, Christine, hopefully that helps. Go ahead, Randy.
And if I could say, just to make sure Christine understands, now this will be recorded, so despite we're the only ones in the room, someone else could hear it. So don't say anything that's trade secret protected or something like that.
I won't. So thank you. Before the break, Madam Chair, you had asked a question about whether we, with our locked in contracts, whether it was the same amount of gas every month, essentially. Right. So yes and no. So yes, by contract, but we have multiple contracts. So let me back this up and hopefully be a little bit more articulate than I was before the break. So we, as I indicated, we try to take like 5-year contracts for our gas during the heating season to ensure our firm supply. But we do multiple contracts so that in certain months we have more gas and in other months we have less. But for the months within the contract, that stays consistent. So for example, we have a contract that runs October through February. We have another contract for a different amount of capacity that runs November through March. So during the months that they overlap, we're getting the amount of gas from the October to February contract and the amount of gas from the November to March contract. So in the shoulder months, there's less gas. In the worst of the winter months that are historically coldest, we have more gas, but the amount within each contract is consistent. So we try and kind of stack those contracts, and that's how we end up with more gas during the months that we need it. But then we have the gas during those months. Then in addition to that gas, we also have a tolerance ability. And earlier I referred to SMS, which is the term in the Northern contracts. DNG gas comes off of the Viking line. So in the Viking contracts, we have what's called tolerance. So that's kind of a no notice firm delivery that can shift from our what our daily entitlement is. So we have a little bit of tolerance that if we need to pick up that additional gas within our tolerance, we can get that without incurring charges for variance. So we don't have the penalty charges for variance. And we still don't have to go out and buy day gas. As long as we stay within our tolerance, we don't have penalties and we don't have to go to the day gas market, which is really where you saw the adverse impacts from Uri. That was from the day gas market where the suppliers were really in the catbird seat and costs went way up. So we do everything we can to stay out of the day gas market. Now, in addition to that, one thing that we didn't have this year, and you had specifically, you know, initiated this line of questioning with what did we do for Uri, but you also asked what did we learn from it. What we didn't have last year, but we will have for the next heating season, is also stored gas. And as we develop more and mature more as a company in the North Dakota market, we'll be able to have a better handle through the analysis that I indicated we do when we're determining our demand entitlement. We'll also be able to know more about not only our summer heating, but where we see cycles in the winter heating. So we now also have been able to acquire a contract for stored gas. So we'll have gas storage for next heating season. And I apologize, you probably are familiar with it, but in case you're not, what we do is when gas is at its lowest cost, not contracted gas, but when during the summer when gas costs are at a lower cost, we purchase gas and inject it into storage. And then we can go and withdraw that gas when we need to in colder months. So looking then at like the Minnesota side of our family of companies, that was another component that really helped insulate those customers from the impacts of Uri. We took more storage gas out in February than we intended to, but we were able to take that stored gas out to be able to continue to provide gas to our customers and not have to incur those day gas penalties. And now we've developed enough in North Dakota that we felt it was prudent for us to enter into a storage contract. So beginning next heating season, we'll have those storage contracts. Then the variety of firm contracts that we have with Viking, like the two that I identified, those are price certain, and we lock in for 5-year terms that we can. We're also always watching for, say, release capacity. Sometimes somebody will have a little bit more gas than they need, and so they'll issue release capacity that then we can go and pick up either as a long-term option on the release capacity or just for a blip, right? Just when it's needed, if there's release capacity out there and we need it, we'll grab release capacity. But anything we can do to stay out of the day gas market, we do. And that's how we are able to insulate our customers from price uncertainty.
Got it.
Does that help at all?
Yeah, it really does. Randy, you had some questions.
I do, and I'll start with one that I just added regarding your storage. Does that storage capacity have to be drawn down then each year and used up? Or is that something that you can fill up and on a really warm year, you don't use it, and then you've got it for the following year?
It doesn't have to be drawn down all the way. You know, that can vary by contract. Some of those things are related to contract terms. But generally, the way we do it, especially in the early stages of the company like this, is we don't want to be overpaying for having so much stored gas that that it's hitting our ratepayers, because obviously we have to pay for the storage contract and we have to pay for the stored gas. So we still try to think about what makes sense for our customers, but not buy so much that we're sitting on a lot of it. We try to store the gas that we think realistically is going to be used and think about when we might need to draw out the gas in a situation where you have like a Uri type situation or a Trans-Canada pipeline explosion type situation, or even a few years ago when we did hit the peak day, we hit a heating degree day. In those kinds of circumstances, we might draw out more storage than we had intended, which means it's going to deplete faster. But our goal is to get as close to what we might need as we can. We don't have to draw it all, though.
And you mentioned number of contracts. Do you have a lot of suppliers or just one or two or three? I don't know so what a lot would be.
All of the DNG territory is served off of the Viking line. So all of our capacity contracts are with Viking. Okay. But we have multiple contracts with them to break it up so that we have different assured amounts at different times of the heating season so that we don't have to take the highest level for the entirety of the heating season, including shoulder months, because that's not good for our ratepayers either. We don't want ratepayers to have to be paying for more capacity than makes sense. So we use multiple contracts, but they are all with Viking. They're just multiple contracts to assure different capacity at different times of the year.
Okay, and then I want to lay something out for you, and you tell me if I'm what you think of it. This is things I've learned regarding Southwest Power Pool. There are some electric generators who were unable to generate during Uri because of force majeure clauses in their gas contracts, and the suppliers just didn't provide it. And I'm hearing that that is just the way the natural gas world runs, that there's kind of standard force majeure language, and these contracts all have it. And even to the point where they don't necessarily have to show that they couldn't supply it. If it's some extreme conditions, there's accusations at least out there that some of them just used the force majeure clause to not supply it and then sell it on the market for a lot more. And so is there concerns about your contracts being all with Viking and the potential of them claiming force majeure and leaving you to do day markets because they choose to go sell it that way?
I don't think that we have heightened concern about that. If you look historically at Viking's performance, we haven't seen that kind of predatory behavior. It is true that force majeure clauses are pretty standard across the industry. There's really no way to avoid them. I think just as in a lot of states that were affected, commissions are doing prudency reviews of how gas distributors operated with things. I think that there are probably also prudency reviews going on at other levels about how gas suppliers behaved as well. But pretty much we're pretty well stuck with Viking and don't have any other options. That's part of the reason that the communities that we serve went without gas for so long, because there aren't any interstate pipelines that run close enough to those communities to provide a variety of options for suppliers, like maybe you have in some of the larger metro areas that lie closer to other supply lines. We were able to identify some creative solutions to pick up gas at Viking in Minnesota and run it over to North Dakota using the service area exemptions that FERC granted for us to do that. But absent that, there really wouldn't be any other option. Now, with the Trans-Dakota pipeline that is in the works because of the grant funding from the special session that hopefully will be awarded within the next couple of months, hopefully within a few years, we'll see a Trans-Dakota pipeline that will bring gas from the western part of the state to the eastern part of the state, and that will allow for more supply options for certain areas, and will allow for more unserved communities to get gas. But that's always the struggle with unserved communities, is if part of the reason it's so expensive to get gas to them is because they don't lie close to any supply pipeline. And with the communities we serve, it's Viking or no one. But we've worked with Viking for a very long time. We're very familiar with it. In fact, Mr. Palmer used to have a lot to do with Viking. And so we're very, very familiar with how they operate, and we don't have any concerns about them being where our capacity comes from to serve these communities.
Okay, and my last thing, just having observed your company's seeming desire for growth, but the fact that a lot of these communities aren't by a large pipeline, is it even conceivable to set up somewhere and have a, whatever you call the storage facilities, and serve a community or some communities by bringing in liquefied natural gas and then converting it and being the distribution company?
I apologize that I can't speak intelligently about that, because I don't know enough about the mechanics of how the LNG is used to know whether that's viable. I can tell you that we have communities reaching out to us regularly from North Dakota, from a lot further west from where we are. Some of the communities that would appear to sort of be next in the dominoes, but communities going well westward in the state, reaching out saying, can you help us find a natural gas solution? And any of those communities that have reached out to us that are legitimately interested, we brainstorm with them. We will do studies of the community. We'll try to figure out, is there any conceivable way that we can help get natural gas to that community based on what supply options are out there now? And that certainly has not been an option that we've seen as a viable one for the communities that have been reaching out to us. We had started putting together some options that were going to come at a lot more expense than what the areas we currently serve do, because of getting gas to them. But we'd started to put together some options. And in fact, that's why I was out attending the special session, was to talk about grant funding when we knew that there was going to be natural gas grant funding that was likely going to be made available. So we were pitching an idea to have some of that grant funding made available for distribution systems to help get distribution to unserved communities, because it is so expensive to get there that it's almost never an economic proposition. And it definitely isn't for the larger companies. You know, we run more lean than a lot of those companies do, and because we're so small, we can respond with creative solutions in ways that some of the larger companies don't have as much ability to do, whereas they have the ability to undertake bigger projects and maybe, you know, more opportunity to do things like creative use of LNG. As I'm sure you're aware, the grant funding that was earmarked in the special session was entirely earmarked for the Trans-Dakota line. So we weren't successful in swinging any of it to be grants for distribution lines. But that doesn't change the fact that there are a lot of communities that are out there. So we're seeing a lot more creative development across the industry in terms of use of LNG, use of biogas, and kind of trying to think about ways to inject more gas into distribution streams from what is historically more traditional. Because we are as small as we are, we don't have the R&D resources to engage in that kind of innovation at this point in time. But we are certainly always open to working with any suppliers that we can work with to help get gas to unserved areas.
Thank you for your good, clear, concise answers. Appreciate it.
Say, Randy, on that point, the LNG, a number of years, at various times over the course of the last 10 years, I've served on different little informal groups trying to get together people to think about solutions for this issue that of natural gas in unserved areas. And at one point, we had that pretty seriously. We're looking at the LNG option. And I think it was Rugby, actually, that was pretty seriously looking at supplying LNG and setting up a, you know, a, basically a town border station that would have the LNG delivered to it. And then you'd build the distribution line from there into the community. and then continue to truck the LNG from the Bakken in. And MDU thinks it's feasible, but it's not cheap. So it hasn't gone, that solution hasn't, I don't think, hasn't resurrected. And, you know, part of it is, I think they were looking for some incentives from the legislature to support that, and those have been, you know, pretty strongly opposed by other interested folks in this industry and suppliers. So anyway, it's an interesting solution, and I do think technically you could have it happen, but I don't know that the economics work. So I have one more question for you, Christine, but I want to see if Sherry has some to talk through.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
My question is along the lines of, what kind of annual reporting do you do to the Minnesota Commission on your gas contracting plan for the upcoming year?
So when we seek a change in our demand entitlement, Minnesota's rules require the regulated gas utilities to request approval for changes in demand entitlement. So if we're going to be adding, it usually is an add, right? It's, or a shift. If we're going to be adding more of that demand entitlement contract, then we do a filing. For us on the Minnesota side, that often is an annual filing for us because of our growth. We've continued to add entitlement in a same philosophical manner, right, with long-term contracts, and adjusting our portfolio in ways that make sense, but using sort of the stacking of overlapping five-year contracts where we can for price insulation. So in Minnesota, that's what's required by the rules, is making those contract. It's a petition for change in contract demand entitlement.
Okay, very good. And so, yeah, I think we need
It's not required annually. It's only required when there is a change. But for a lot of companies, as a practical matter, that ends up being an annual filing, or maybe you skip a year here and there.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not a formal requirement, but I do think we should think about having an annual discussion with our gas distribution companies to talk about their upcoming plans to, you know, what is their peak demand? How would they plan to meet it? You know, what are their alternatives? How they're going to approach any sort of higher than peak issues? Just in light of the significant impact that storm had on ratepayers that is dragging out a couple of years, I think it would be helpful to hear about this stuff on a more routine basis, and it seems like before the heating season begins would be the right time. So let's throw that out there. Christine, you might hear more from us on that, but that's more of a point to staff than anything right now.
The other utilities might not like me very much for pointing that out, because they do tend to be a lot of work. But just for your information, what goes into those, at least in the way we present it, and I think the way everybody else does in, you know, some version or another, is we walk through what our capacity, what our usage has been, what our capacity is, how we get to our projected amount, why we pick the reserve margin that we choose. So we provide the information about our statistical regression analysis and our mathematical analysis, and why we think we've hit at the right spot in terms of contract. It's never a situation where you can say, we think we need X amount of therms, and so we're going to contract for X amount of therms.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. It's like buying paper towel at Sam's Club or Costco. You might think you need 7 rolls, but your options are 6 rolls or 12 rolls. Mm-hmm. So you're going to buy the 12 so that you get your 7, right? So you can never, if you're doing it with fixed contract, you're never going to hit it exactly right. So the trick becomes, where do you strike that balance? You want to make sure you have enough for what you anticipate the regular use is going to be, plus a little extra for the reserve margin if it's a design day. But not so much that your ratepayers are paying for stuff that they don't need to be paying for. And so in our petitions for contract demand entitlement approval, we incorporate what our contract is, what we're adding on, but also that sort of background analysis so that we can assure the commission that we've acted prudently, because it always is a balancing act. So sure. If that helps you think about what you might want to request,
yeah,
that's what the petitions look like.
Very good. All right. It's been a good discussion. Does anybody else have more questions, or staff, Victor, Brian? All right. Good. Christine, thank you for your flexibility today. Really appreciate you hanging in there and sticking with us a little bit longer than we had originally anticipated, and for all your thorough information regarding your tariff changes. We'll proceed and get those finalized as soon as possible so those can be taken care of. So
I appreciate it, and thank you very much for the quick rescheduling of the hearing that had to be canceled due to unforeseen circumstances, because I leave town tomorrow for a couple of weeks. So I really appreciate you getting this back on.
Excellent.
On the calendar.
Excellent. All right. Very good. Well, safe travels to you. With that, our informal with Dakota Natural Gas is concluded. Thank you.
Thank you.